but I passed the breath test. This is McDaniel Reynolds with the Reynolds Defense Firm, and we specialize in one thing. We represent good people facing DUI charges. While you know that it's illegal to drive with a .08 or greater blood alcohol content, not everyone knows that you could be arrested in Oregon for an alcohol DUI even if you blow well under a .08. This is a pretty loose standard, and it's a way that many of the good people we represent find themselves needing our help when they thought they were doing everything right. The Reynolds Defense Firm. We're solid, we're here if you need us, and we are very good at what we do.
BFFT. From the PAC West Center in downtown Portland, presented by High Caliber Millwrights, here's John Canzano with a bald-faced truth.
Oregon State spring game tomorrow. Gates open 11 a.m. at Reser Stadium. Ryan Gunderson, the offensive coordinator at Oregon State, joined us on yesterday's show. Here he is talking about his quarterback, Malik Murphy.
Malik is one of those guys that he's not really afraid of anything. You know, that he's willing to try everything. He's also willing to tell me what he likes and what he doesn't like. You know, when you can have a real open conversation, an honest conversation and communication line with the quarterback, and you can tell them, hey, I want you to do this, and they understand it, and you don't have to over-explain it, you don't have to over-teach it, there's a ton of value in that.
Malik joined us earlier this week. He said that the ceiling for the offense is sky high.
I think we're still trying to find our identity completely. You know, I think we could be super well-rounded and run the ball very well, of course, with Hank back there at running back, and having a strong run game will open up the pass game and play action pass and all those type of things. So I think we're just trying to find a way to balance all that and put it in a way where everyone can eat, because we have good players all over the offense, and it's one of those things where we can all win if we do it right. So, I'm super excited for, the future of our offense and how we've been practicing so far. I think we have a very high ceiling.
Scrimmage starts at noon. Gates open at 11 a.m. Here to talk about it, Angie Machado, BeaverBlitz.com. Angie, what do you hear there? Brian Gunderson, Malik Murphy, what do you hear? And what are you hearing about spring practice with those two?
Yeah, I mean, you first of all, you look at Malik and you watch what he does at practice and at Beaver Nation's in for a fun game, because the guy can throw. He's big. He's physical. He's not going to tuck and run, which I still think he could. I think there's that ability. But then you look at Jabari Johnson, and he's made a ton of strides. The hugest concern for me, though, is the O-line, and that's it's a work in progress. Yesterday's practice, 10 of the offensive linemen sat out or were limited. Nothing major right now new. I mean, some of these guys are working back from injuries from last year, but that is probably my biggest concern heading into the season, is how will Malik Murphy's protection be, come August, September.
They've got a offensive line coach, new old coach in Coach Kavanaugh, who, comes back to Oregon State from Oregon. Does he give you the same kind of confidence that Jim Mihalchek gave it, as an offensive line coach, or do these guys still need the bodies?
No, I mean, I think they need some bodies, or at least some coaching up, but I will, yes, I mean, I was talking with Jake Hedberg, our staff writer in Corvallis at one of the practices, and it's so good to see Cav back. I mean, he's a gem of a person, a human. He loves his players, but he can squeeze out what he needs, and he does remind me. It was a great comparison, John, because I would say, if Mihalchek is 1A, Coach Cav is 1B. So the Beavers did not lose a step with Kyle DeVan leaving. And honestly, there's not even a real drop-off in terminology, because Cav was DeVan's coach. So a lot of kind of meshing there. But bodies, I have that gut that, there's some work to be done there. But there's some time and some healing, and a lot of the holdouts are potentially just precautionary. I mean, there's no use getting these guys banged up for a spring game or the end of spring practice.
You get pretty tuned in to what's going on in the portal at Beaver Blitz, so give us an idea. Do you see maybe Oregon State as a buyer here as the portal kind of winds out this week, or into next week, or is there a potential for some defections after the spring game? How are you reading that?
Yeah, there's going to have to be some defections. Oregon State's going to need to get their roster down to 105. They're heavy right now, so I do expect there's going to be some conversations. You know, coaches are going to sit down with these guys after spring, kind of let them know where they're at. Those guys looking for playing time are going to be jumping in the portal, looking to go. I haven't heard of anybody. I have no, you know, spidey sense going that any of the, you know, two deep contributors are looking to bolt. So that's positive. You never say never in today's day and age where guys are, you know, it's kind of crazy the things that you hear on a daily basis that change. But if you're a Beaver fan, there are going to be guys going to the portal. That being said, I think Oregon State will keep their eyes open if the perfect prospect, like an offensive lineman potentially, you know, jumps in that has some connection that Coach Cab thinks would be a good fit. I could see that being a landing spot.
Malik Murphy comes in. They also got a couple of tight ends that are transfers from other places. And I think the bigger takeaway I had is that Oregon State's collective is spending some money on football, and it looks like, you know, they're trying to, you know, make some noise with this schedule this season. What, besides Malik Murphy, what areas do you think are you excited to see maybe some spring game and see some action at?
Yeah, I'm really excited about the secondary because I think that is where Oregon State's going to be really strong this season in defense. A lot of guys that have had a lot of experience. You look at last year, and I think at one point last season, John, there were out of the 22 on the defensive two deep, I think 17 had missed a game or more. That's how thin Oregon State was last year, and that led to a lot of their problems. But those guys now come in with a year under their belt, some playing time, some of those young guys. So when you look at, you know, yesterday the first team defense cornerbacks were Exodus Ayers, and then two newcomers in Trey Glasper, Jaleel Tucker, and then you have Tyrese Ivey, Jaheim Patterson, Skylar Thomas, Cy Vandravoile. That's some guys with some playing time there. So I'm excited to see that secondary. I'm also looking forward to seeing what that passing game looks like with Murphy. You know, Trent Walker, Darius Clemens, and then Taz Reddick. They moved him over to the slot, which was something I kind of wondered why they didn't do that sooner. I think he's a big-time playmaker, and to get him on the field. But like you mentioned, the tight end play is, if you talk to coaches, they're super excited about the tight ends.
Angie Machado with us, Beaver Blitz, spring game for Oregon State tomorrow. Trent Bray, he slides over, wants to be the D coordinator. Prevailing thought from the football people I talked to is this is a good idea. Nobody's better equipped to call the defense. But how is he doing with managing the two roles and those two jobs?
Yeah, I think it was actually the perfect storm setup, and I think he handled it perfectly. You know, he goes out and gets a veteran coach in Rob Akey, who, you know, has head coaching experience, has defensive experience, gets Rob, Coach Akey, to come in, and not only is he out helping on the field where needed, but he's also helping behind the scenes in some of that managerial stuff that has to happen from a head coaching standpoint to free up Coach Bray then for Trent to do the on-the-field coaching. The energy level this year, John, this is my 20th spring camp, and I don't think I've ever seen a spring camp that has this much energy. Mm-hmm. And that's a direct correlation, I think, to Trent. You know, Trent's out there running around, especially in defense. I see everybody running, like they're running between drills and, you know, sprinting, and they're hyped. There's lots of talk, which, you know, spring's usually, it can be kind of a, you know, grind. But the guys are not going through the motions. And defensively, it's almost comedy. I mean, anytime that ball is loose or hits the ground, the entire, you know, all 11 guys are swarming to it. So as far as defensively goes, tons of energy. And like I said, I think it's a good mix. Some of these coaches that he's brought in the offseason, you know, Danny Langsdorf on offense. There's some veteran coaches there that can really help him, you know, if he has questions or to draw that, you know, from the knowledge in the room.
The front end of the schedule is tough. I mean, those first four games, it's front loaded. It's Cal. It's Fresno State. It's Texas Tech on the road. It's Oregon at Oregon. And it feels like, you know, the back end of this schedule, much more forgiving. How does that strike you? How important, you know, especially are those first two with Cal and Fresno State in your mind?
Those two, I think, are even bigger than, you know, Oregon or Texas Tech, because I think you come out of the gate, and those are two teams that if Oregon State wants to be where they want to be, they have to beat those teams. You know, Fresno State's going to be joining the conference in 26. Cal, you know, is a defector into the ACC, but, you know, was kind of that mid-level Pac-12, mid to mid-lower level. So those are two games that Oregon State really needs to come out and win, especially having them at home. So, you know, that's having Cal at home to open the season, I think, is huge. But it's going to be a huge test as well. So, you know, the portal, though, it makes it so hard to even forward project because, I mean, Cal now, like, has no running backs in their room. And, I mean, the portal keeps changing the landscape basically daily. But those two games, if you can come out of that four-game stretch 2-2, I think, that gives you a really good shot then the rest of the season.
Angie, the offense last year, I had a hard time figuring out if it was what Ryan Gunderson wanted to do because they were so limited at quarterback and then they had some injuries in the backfield and then they really couldn't do anything. And I was at that Air Force game and Ryan Gunderson after that game looked so down. I thought, gosh, he looked like, you know, he made a comment about letting his school down. He felt terrible. You could tell. How different will the offense be with this group? And, you know, how much do you think they'll run the football? How much will they be a pocket passing team? Will they look like the old Mike Riley teams because Kavanaugh and Gunderson are there and they've got a pocket passer? What do you expect?
Well, it has to be better than, you know, some of those games, you know, the end of the season. Again, so much of it comes down, in my opinion, to O-line play. I think this team, they want to be kind of more, and I don't want to say like a Mike Riley, because I do think, you know, what I think we're going to see is we're going to see both quarterbacks because I think they're going to develop packages for Jabari Johnson to come in and use his legs. He has been electric in practice. His arm has actually looked better. So I think that will keep teams honest that when Jabari does come in, it's not for sure going to be an actual running play. I worry about depth at running back with Hankerson and Sala kind of being your two, then, you know, kind of who's up after that. But this team has the ability with Malik. You know, I don't think McCoy was a great, he didn't have a great arm. Didn't have great connection. Malik struggled, you know, that first 2 weeks of spring camp back in March to really have a connection, but he's really come along this past real, probably week and a half of having that connection with receivers. So I think that's positive. Like I said, Trent Walker's taking another step. The other thing that's interesting, and I heard it in the prelude here that Coach Gunderson addressed how Malik, you know, likes to banter and likes to tell him what he likes. Malik has also been a very, almost a coaching figure on the sideline. So after every play, you see him meeting up with the receiver. They're comparing notes. If it was a miss or a drop, they're, you know, talking about who, you know, who made the wrong route read or who ran the wrong route, where the ball placement. I mean, you watch them and they're communicating. It's good to see. And I think with the receivers and then the addition of those tight ends, the passing game should be much improved. Again, it all comes down to that O-line.
Angie Machado, Beaver Blitz, our guest, Oregon State spring game tomorrow, Research Stadium, gates open at 11 a.m. Angie, the bigger picture, Oregon State and Washington State now have a conference. They need one more team. Looks like a media deal is coming down the pipeline. 2025 looks like it's going to be real heavy with the CW. Maybe Fox and TNT come in. How important is this season in your mind with the trajectory of knowing where they're going in a year, and how does it feel different from a year ago, or is it still got that urgency and the pall hanging over it that I think saw a year ago? Or how do you sort of see it from 20,000 feet?
I think there's a little bit more calm than maybe last year, where there was a lot of unknowns, a lot of uncertainty. I think, as you mentioned about the NIL, I think Oregon State's really trying to be a player in NIL, and that doesn't mean they're going to be competing with Oregon and USC and some of those huge pockets. But they're in the game, right? They're in with other Power Four conferences as far as their quote-unquote payroll. I think we also saw that football went on, and Oregon State did okay. I mean, they didn't do great, but they were on TV. They were in a lot of houses across the country, and it's kind of settling in, and I don't know if much changes, really, as far as Oregon State, even when they were in the Pac-12, was kind of always scrapping. They were always the fighter fighting, you know, above his weight. And I see that kind of still happening today. I mean, they're still going to be that fighting to get recognition, fighting to get respect, fighting for wins, fighting to, you know, get on that next rung and be recognized and a chance at the CFP. So that's, I think, kind of Oregon State's MO. And I think they would much prefer having the Pac-12 in intact, but at the same time, they have the hand they're dealt, and yeah, they're going to continue to fight, and it's actually been okay.
They've got some guys, maybe they didn't get in the portal, but some guys that may be coming back from injury. Where can they expect maybe to get a contribution? I know Reggie Tung's kid, he sat out all last year. Everybody's kind of going, well, can he be a player this year? I believe he's a linebacker. Is there anybody like that in your mind that you're really curious to kind of see in the spring game or maybe as the season approaches?
Yeah, actually, you mentioned Micaiah Tung, and I mean, talk about a couple pretty brutal injuries he's had, but that last knee injury he suffered, over a year ago was brutal. He has actually made a huge comeback and is right there. I would actually say he's running with Rajon Davis, the USC transfer, kind of in that, 1A, 1B at the inside linebacker spot. So excited to see him and what he's going to do. And then, like I said, the O-line. They lost some guys, especially Josh Gray, huge loss for them. Nick Norris is a guy. He's not in for spring. He's a D lineman, but he's one I'm watching because I think he was an ACL last year, so he should be back by fall. But then you look at the offensive line, and you have like Tyler Moreno, Jacob Strand, Tyler Volton. Those three are really crucial. They were out most of last season, but those guys, all three, have some starting experience. So those three I'm watching pretty closely.
The Beaver fans, now I got to think you've got your finger on the pulse of Beaver Nations, but give me an idea. Are they now lamenting that men's basketball is not where the investment's going to be? It looks like football. Do they sort of understand what Scott Barnes and the athletic department are doing here? It looks like they're going in on the sports that they have historically had some success in, baseball and women's basketball, and funding those at a level that can keep that success sustained, and then pouring the rest into football. Am I reading that right? And how's the fan base doing with that, if so?
Yeah, I mean, you have, Beaver Blitz is the diehards, the most diehard that you have. There are still a pretty big and vocal contingent that are actually just kind of pissed at Scott Barnes for giving Coach Tinkle that huge extension after the Elite Eight.
Yeah.
Because they feel like that has gone completely sideways. But it's something I feel like I beat the drum too, because you do have some old timers that knew Oregon State when they were a basketball school. My lifetime, it really hasn't been. So there's those guys who still want to see the glory days of Ralph Miller and students lining up. And the end of the day, though, even if Oregon State basketball was like some amazing program, it's not going to bring the money that football is. So, yeah, that's the drum I beat. The money has to go to football because that's the only thing that's going to drive the rest of the bus. Then you fund baseball and, like I said, women's basketball, maybe gymnastics to a decent level. But football is what drives the bus, and that's what's going to kind of lift the entire athletic department, because, you can't spread everything super thin and expect any success.
Angie Machado, I appreciate you. I'll see you at the stadium tomorrow.
Okay, see you there. Drive safe.
All right, thank you. There she goes, Beaver Blitz. I'm excited to see the tight ends. They've got a room there that is formidable. I'm excited, of course, to see Malik Murphy. Can the defense be that much better with Trent Bray leading it? We'll find out. I'm also interested in talking with Teresa Gold, the Pac-12 commissioner. Report coming out of Utah today that Utah State's athletic director doing some talking, saying that there were like 18 different conversations that Utah State had with the Pac-12. I think there was some strategy in Utah State's athletic director, Diana Sabu, coming public today to kind of talk about how many times Utah State reached out to the Pac-12 and how Utah State was unhappy that UNLV and Air Force were positioned by the Mountain West as these two great schools. Maybe it's just my spidey senses tingling here, but I feel like the Pac-12 and Mountain West are negotiating a settlement. And Utah State's AD just poked a bunch of holes in the Mountain West Conference assertion that these teams were quote-unquote poached. Sounds like Utah State and the other Mountain West schools that left were pretty unhappy in the Mountain West and unhappy with the revenue sharing and unhappy with sharing their NCAA tournament units with schools that weren't earning them. And I wondered today, it just struck me, like, they're starting to talk settlement. Why is the Utah State AD out talking so much about, how this all went down with the Pac-12? I kind of wonder if the poaching penalty settlement is being impacted by these kinds of conversations that are now happening publicly. for the first time, Utah State's AD coming out and saying, hey, you know, we were reaching out to the Pac-12. We were saying, what about us? Don't leave us behind. Very interested in that. So I will talk with Teresa Gold, the Pac-12 Conference Commissioner, tomorrow at Research Stadium as well. She's going to be in attendance. I want you to leave it here. We've got great sound. Punch It Audio's coming up, the 5 at 5, top of the hour. We'll take you right into the weekend on today's show. I hope you're enjoying and soaking up that great weather. As a parent, I am like thinking about my kids. They're outside right now. That's great. My college kid, I'm going to see her on Saturday. I feel like I just dropped her off at college. I'll talk more about this later in the show. I feel like I just dropped the kid off at college, and she's in the last term. She's in her last quarter at Oregon State and then graduating. I feel like, you know, I dropped her off at the dorms, and now there's a cap and gown coming. All of that ahead on today's show. You got the BFT.